start then.
Okay, well, the subject we've got is the miners' strike of 1984-1985, the lessons of the miners' strike. And first of all, I would say that it's probably the most important industrial battle that we've had in Britain since the general strike of 1926. I myself came to London in 1982 when I was working full time for the militant, the militant tenancy. And about 5 months before the strike was to take place, I was made the national organiser of the tenancy, and therefore given the onerous responsibility of trying to coordinate our intervention in the different spheres that were opening up. 1983-84 was a kind of mixed period. On the one hand, you had the victory of Margaret Thatcher in the general election, which gave her 144 majority. Also, it was the beginning really of the big battle in Liverpool, where the Liverpool City Council, under the influence of militant, began a policy of building houses, providing reforms and so on for the working class in Liverpool, which brought them into complete conflict with the Tory government. So that was happening also as a background. Militant itself had two MPs in Parliament and was the biggest left Marxist group organisation in Britain at that particular time. And therefore the miners' strike was also regarded as an inevitable clash that was unfolding with the victory of Thatcher and the difficulties faced by British capitalism at that time, and how Thatcher represented the interests of the ruling class, wanted to solve the problems of British capitalism at the expense of the working class. And there are various parallels, if you like, quite astounding parallels between 1983-84 and the build-up to the general strike in 1925-1926. And one of the parallels was that, again, 1926, the Baldwin Tory government came to power and again was attempting to solve the problems of British capitalism by putting the burdens on the shoulders of the working class. And in 1926, the vanguard of the working class, the biggest section of the working class, was the miners. And that's why they were taken on in order to try and defeat them as a means of defeating the working class as a whole. And in a similar vein, Thatcher also, although he was elected in 1979, was re-elected in 1983, again by accident in one sense, because of the victory of British imperialism in the Falklands, provided this nationalist euphoria at that particular moment. The Labour leaders weren't able to measure up to answer the Tories, and as a result, Thatcher won quite a landslide victory. And with that under her belt, she wanted to turn on the working class, prepare the ground for taking on the working class. And the militant tendency was going to play a full role in this particular development, this unfolding class battle. I do even remember us having discussions about firstly whether we were going to be made illegal or not, because in 1926, or rather 1925 as a matter of fact, the leadership of the Communist Party were all arrested and put in prison prior to the general strike, and we were concerned that action might be used against us. It wasn't, as it turned out, although I had the responsibility of setting up print shops in different parts in order that if our operation was closed down, we could do other work. In fact, I remember I was asked whether I wanted to go into hiding at one stage, but fortunately that wasn't the case, it wasn't necessary. And the ruling class had bigger fish to fry, so to speak, insofar as Skagel is the main enemy, the defeat of the National Union of Mine Workers, although clearly the special branch and the ruling class also looked at us with certain trepidation from the point of view of the influence that we were building up in the Labour Party at that stage, and that's why they launched a witch hunt in order against Marxism, the militant tendency, and so on and so forth. Subsequently, we found out there were about 30 agents, MI5 agents, planted in militant in order to get as much information and so on and so forth, which is probably par for the course, really. They obviously want to protect their own political interests, and therefore they want to keep their BDI on those they regard as subversive, as they did, of course, with the National Union of Mine Workers, and of Skagel in particular, who was, I think even the local fish and chip shop or the cafe on the corner from the headquarters of the NUM was bugged in order to get some information. Anyway, this is to kind of a little background, because there's a larger background to all this as well, in the sense, as I explained earlier, you have the decline of British capitalism, which had taken place over a whole historical period, and the victory of Thatcher in 1979 represented a kind of fundamental change from the point of view of the ruling class. Here they had unleashed representatives who weren't the most far-sighted, to say the least, but they were probably the most rabid insofar as they saw their task as an out-and-out, no compromise, just to eliminate as much as possible the trade union movement, the power of the trade union movement, to restore the class balance of forces as they see it, in favour of the employers, in favour of the capitalists, because prior to that the working class movement was quite strong. You had years of full employment in the 1950s and 60s which built up the strength of the trade unions. In 1979, for instance, it was 13.5 million trade unionists. Compare that today, 6 million trade unions, you see that was the height of organised labour insofar as you could describe it in that way. And Thatcher's determination was to break that grip, to smash and undermine the trade union movement, in order to undermine the struggles of the working class and make them pay for the crisis. Because at the end of the day, the way out they saw was to make Britain a low wage economy, or put the burdens on the working class in order to restore the profitability and competitive nature of British capitalism itself. Clearly, that was the aim. In fact, 1979 a report was produced by one of the leaders of the Tory party, a book called Ridley. I do quote it in this particular book, where he comes out and gives a report saying, well, you know, the first thing, if you are going to change this balance of forces in the industry, then you have to understand that there are certain groups of workers you don't take on, and other groups you do take on, more vulnerable groups. If you are going to take them, you've got to take them on one at a time. Don't let them coalesce together. Pick one off, deal with it, and then another, and so on. Also, we need to beef up the police force, beef up anti-trade union legislation, prepare the ground for a struggle. Make sure you take on lots of scab lorry drivers in particular. That's the idea, and this was quite blatantly stated as the only way you're going to take on the labour movement. It's going to be serious preparation to take on and smash the movement. After all, you have to remember that it wasn't so long before that the miners had defeated the Tory government in 1972 and 1974. Although, again, look at the historical parallel, there'd been no miners, national strike of miners since 1926, the first time from 76 to 1972. And that's the reason for that. A number of reasons. But first of all, the depression, the fact that the staffing was knocked out of the mining industry for a whole period of time. Also, there was an attempt in the 50s to class collaboration or what have you. But by 1972, things had been transformed. And above all, there were younger militant leaders in the National Union of Mine Workers. were determined not to allow their standards to be to fall, also not to allow the pits to be closed. They had been devastated in the period of 1950s and 1960s. And it was on the basis of the struggle of the miners they were able to make a victory in 72 and 1974. In fact, they brought down the Tory government in 1974. And the ruling class were terrified. For the first time in British history, an elected government has been brought down by the trade unions. They couldn't allow this to happen. This is a scandal, you know, and therefore they were trying to put a stop to this attack on democracy and attack on freedom, as they would express it, obviously. And therefore, an element of the strategy of Thatcher was revenge, but the fundamental thing was to restore the power of British capitalism at the expense of the working class. And if they could defeat the miners, which was seen as the vanguard of the working class, then they would be able to cow the rest of the workers. That was the kind of strategy, quite simple, but quite straightforward. And therefore, this showdown was extremely important. It's as important as in 1926 in many ways. And the Tory government didn't jump into it straight away. They tested the ground. In fact, in 1981, there was a closure or announcement of closures. And that resulted in unofficial strikes being spread from South Wales, Scotland, Yorkshire, and the Tory government retreated. A bit like 1925 and Red Friday, where the Baldwin government and the threats retreated in order to prepare the ground better, that's all. And that's exactly what Thatcher did as well. I think it was Mick McGarthy, who was the vice president of the NUM, said it wasn't so much a U-turn as a body swerve. You know, they were just preparing the ground for a future attack on the miners. And at this particular time, the mass unemployment had developed in Britain. We talk about 2-3 million unemployed. Factories were being closed down. There had been a defeat in 1980 of the steel workers, who had a clash with the government over jobs. They were defeated, and big job losses as a result took place in the steel industry. Thatcher brought in a bloke called Ian McGregor, a Scots guy from the United States, a very wealthy man, to be head the British Steel Corporation, and for him to do the dirty, to stab the steel workers in the back. And therefore, doesn't come as a great surprise, is after he'd done that job, he was then later made the head of the National Coal Board, and his task again was to defeat the miners. He had proved his worth, if you like. And clearly, things were also changing in the mining union. The mining union had been under the control of the right wing for a whole historical period. Although the younger, newer layers were coming through in 1974, above all, around a figure who became quite famous, Arthur Scargill, who had led, particularly in 1972 strike, he went down to Saltley Gate in Birmingham. 10,000 engineering workers walked out. They closed it down and finished the strike, basically. And he was keen to employ different tactics, new militant tactics, flying pickets, basically, to operate an effective strike strategy. And he became the president. This Joe Gormley, who was the right-wing president of the union, retired in 1981. And Scargill stood as the left candidate and won 70% of the vote. It was a landslide victory, incredible turnaround. And that sort of set the seal for what was going to happen, a big showdown in the government and the left-wing National Union of Miners. And in this period also, we see the Thatcher government attempting to take on other sectors of the working class, to test them out. And one of the main ones was in Warrington, where there was a newspaper plant owned by a guy called Eddie Shah. And basically they tried to introduce non-union labour. There was a big conflict with the other unions, the print workers' unions, SOGA and the NGA at that time. And it led to a defeat of the Union, because the forces of the state were used against the Union. They were, not only did they have the police being beefed up against them and used them against pickets, but also their assets, they were fined, they refused to pay the fines, and their assets were sequestrated, were seized by the state. And basically that kind of tried to, they tried to break the Union using legal or the law, basically. And Thatcher introduced, let's be clear, 9 pieces of legislation throughout the whole of this period, including the outlaw of secondary picketing, or solidarity action, if you want to put it in reality. A whole number of laws were introduced in order to try and chain the trade unions, make them ineffective. And there were demands that the TUC fight these laws, but the leaders of the TUC weren't very militant, shall we say, weren't very determined to take on the Tories. They paid lip service to these things, and therefore a trial of strength took place, with individual unions being taken on. But it was quite clear that the ruling class began to learn from this. You know, the fact they could take on a union, the NGO, which is powerful, the print unions were quite powerful, and defeat them, give them cause for confidence, a growth in confidence, that eventually now they think they would take on the miners. And this came about with Ian McGregor telling the Yorkshire representative of the coal board to announce the closure, because he was very talking about, when he came into office, he was talking about the need to rationalise industry, the need to close uneconomic pits, which had never been done prior to this, and basically that we need a programme of closures in order to reduce the supply of coal, etc., etc. And all these, this was banging the war drum, really, to prepare public opinion and prepare the mass media for an onslaught against the miners. Because what you're talking about in 1984 is not just taking on the miners, it is a struggle of the entire ruling class against the working class, but which is epitomised by this militant struggle of the miners' mine workers' union itself.